We have a very special guest on the line with us right now, actress Marina Sirtis, who is best known for her role as Diana Troy on the television series and the subsequent movies Star Trek: The Next Generation. Marina, how are you? Thanks for being on the program with us.
Well, thanks for asking me. A bit last minute. You just got a call today. Who's canceled?
I'm glad you can make it.
I'm glad too.
Now, before we get to all things Star Trek that I'm sure a lot of people want to hear, but I want to ask you something else entirely different for beginners. You grew up in London.
I did.
Of Greek descent.
I did.
And one thing I know about people of Greek descent, whether you're born in Greece or whether you're just of Greek descent, you're never far from Greece. Now, I understand you got a chance to go to the Olympics.
I did. I just got back last Monday.
What was that like for you?
Well, I was just pleased that we proved everybody wrong. What was really sad was that, I went to some track and field and some soccer, and, okay, admittedly, there's not going to be any Americans at a soccer game, especially men's soccer, but, there were hardly any Americans at the track and field finals, and I thought that was really sad because I obviously got scared out of going, and, Greece needed as many people as possible to show up to pay for this thing, and having that terror alert a week before the game started, I think just scared everyone out of going.
But Greece really did a fine job hosting the world.
Well, it's fantastic. Yeah, Athens is a new city. The subway is amazing. I mean, it's like a museum. You only have to dig down 5 feet in Greece and you're going to find some ruins, So they've incorporated a lot of what they found into the subway. So you walk in and you see, it's like walking into a museum, and they're beautiful, and the Greeks are very proud of their city and they're keeping it clean, and it's just beautiful. It really is. And I was just thrilled that there was no trouble, and the games went smoothly, and athletes weren't late for their events, and nothing that was predicted happened. And it was finished. That was the other thing, that nothing was going to be finished, and everything was finished.
Exactly. We are talking with Marina Sirtis, who is a fine actress. People remember her best from the television series Star Trek: The Next Generation. Let's go back to the beginning. With Star Trek, how did you get the role of Diana Troy?
I auditioned. I mean, as simple as that. I'd been in the country. I mean, I'm British, as you said, and I had been in America for about 3-4 months. And the audition came up, and I just started auditioning. Six auditions later, I got the job. But they certainly, tested us out. They made us audition for a long time to make sure they cast it right.
Did you audition for that role specifically, or did you audition for just a female character on Star Trek?
Well, actually, when I originally started auditioning, I was auditioning for the part of Tasha Yar, and which ended up being played by Denise Crosby, and Denise was auditioning for the part of Troy. So about 3 auditions in, they switched us around.
Do you know why?
The director said that he sensed an empathy in me that the character of Troy needed.
Right.
So, and I am the kind of person that people open up to. I don't know why, because I'm the biggest gossip on the planet, and people know that, and they still tell me all their secrets. So, all their secrets, and my husband's agreeing with me.
Oh, he's in the background, is he?
Yeah, he's plumbing right now. We had a pipe burst.
Oh, there, dear.
He's in plumbing mode.
Okay. Now, when you auditioned for the role and got the role, Star Trek, while it had become a phenomenon, certainly a cult classic, the television show had already been canceled. There were a few movies, but no one knew what kind of explosion this was going to be. Were you aware of the whole Trekker world before you got into that spandex?
No, I mean, not at all. Having come from England, and Trekdom existed there, but not to the extent that it exists in America and Canada, actually. So I had no idea about the whole fandom phenomenon. That was kind of a surprise / bonus, actually, after I got the job. I was the first person in the cast to really go out and do conventions on a regular basis. And it is nice because I come from the theater, and doing TV nonstop for 7 years, I really missed a live audience, and doing conventions was kind of my little substitute for doing plays.
So you come from, as they say, across the pond.
Mm-hmm.
You're a classically trained actress.
Mm-hmm.
You went to, did you not go to RADA?
I went to Guildhall.
Okay.
Which is the new trendy school now. It's like where Joseph Fiennes went and a bunch of other like hip actors. So it suddenly got really hip to have gone to Guildhall.
So classically trained actress, as Patrick Stewart, also classically trained actor.
Yeah.
What was it like the first time you get on that set and you do what is now one of the famous scenes that every Star Trek cast member goes through? You know, when the ship is hit and you've all got to start rolling around on
the floor.
On the floor. You know, do you say to yourself, well, the first time you do that, I'm a classically trained actor. What
actually,
am I doing here?
You don't actually think I'm a classically trained actor. You think, oh my God, I am so bad at this. and I am so embarrassed. I mean, that's the thing. You have to kind of get over your embarrassment of flinging yourself around. And also acting to things that aren't there. That's the other thing that's kind of hard to do when you first start. I look back. I don't actually watch myself on TV that much, but occasionally if I catch a glimpse of first season episodes, I'm always horrified at how bad we all were at that when we first started, what we call the shaking acting. And we all got much better at it over the years, but we were, I think, I can say, in all honesty, we were all pretty dreadful at it when we started.
We are talking with Marina Sirtis, she of Star Trek fame, The Next Generation, the role of Deanna Troi. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. Gordon Saint Laurent, hi, you're on CJD.
Peter?
Hi.
Hi there. I'm one of these Trekkers that you've been talking about.
Okay.
And I really like your role, and I don't really, now that the secret's out, everybody knows you guys screwed up. Nobody knows this.
You know what? I think you'd have to be, like, deaf, dumb, and blind not to see that we screwed up.
But when you like the show so much, you don't care.
I know.
Anyway,
and you know what?
I got a question to ask you.
They forgive us everything, because
okay.
I'm surprised personally that after the first episode, I was still employed, because I thought I was so dreadful in that first episode. So I was just happy that they kind of stuck with me after that. But the fans are fantastic. They do forgive us everything, especially Canadian fans, I have to say, because you are the nicest people on the planet.
Yeah.
And it's just great. It's just great that you guys, play along.
I got a question to ask you that's not related to this. Do you remember any specific episodes?
I do remember some specific
episodes.
Okay,
there's one episode where the captain is getting interrogated, or rather tortured, by a Cardassian with some kind of a gadget that he implants into him.
Uh-huh.
And then he comes back on the ship, and he's showing his real weak side. You know, it's really good that the heroes are now being able to do that. And in our society, you know, heroes are always expected to have a suit of armor that nobody can get through. And he showed that weak side to you. Remember
I don't remember the name of the episode, but I do remember the episode. And I think that was one of
lights.
The...
He was being forced to say how many lights there were. There were three lights. And every time he said there were three lights, and the Cardassian kept saying there were four.
That's right, and they were trying to kind of brainwash him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but
they succeeded, and then you took him back.
Yeah,
and he admitted to you that they did.
The thing about Patrick was that what I thought made him the best captain of all, and of course I am biased, but I do believe that, was that he did show so many different colors of his personality, and he wasn't just this shoot-'em-up guy who, you know, wowed all the ladies and just didn't have a weak spot. He was a real person with foibles and weaknesses and strengths, the same as anybody else. And, you know, being the superb actor that he is, he was able to portray that so brilliantly.
Thank you for your call, Gord. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. And I should mention, I'm a Trekker myself, so I've watched every episode. I own every episode. One thing I've always wanted to know, and that is, just from an acting point of view, were you able to keep a straight face on set when Majel Barrett was there playing your mom?
We were never able to keep a straight face on the set, ever. I mean, whether Majel was there or not. Obviously, when Majel was there, it was harder, especially for me, because I got to work with her so much. But we were a very rowdy cast. It started on day one and then proceeded to get worse over the 7 years of the show that was on. I mean, we had a director in the first season who directed two shows and then refused to ever come back. And we were chastised very badly for that, because this was unheard of in the history of Hollywood that this would happen. But we just had a good time, and we got along so well. I mean, the show's been over now for 10 years, and we're still best friends. And I don't know of many other shows in Hollywood that can say that.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. We are talking with Marina Sirtis. She is an actress. You've seen her on Star Trek: The Next Generation. We're also going to find out some of the other things she has been working on. 7900991, the number to call.
Now, more of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. We are talking with Marina Sirtis. She is an actress, best known for her role as Deanna Troi on the television series Star Trek: The Next Generation. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. Aline, hi, you're on CJD.
Hi. Hey. I'm so excited to be able to talk to you.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, because The Next Generation is my favorite of all.
Really? Are you French-Canadian?
Pardon?
Are you French-Canadian?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are. I can hear your accent. Comment ça va?
You can tell. And you know, best episode that you were in that I liked the best for me was, you remember, you were pregnant?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that little light that
left? Uh-huh. That was called The Child, and it was the first episode of the second season.
Yeah, and I had goosebumps.
Oh.
I had goosebumps when I saw that.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. That was actually one of my favorite episodes.
No, that's okay.
Thank you.
Take care, Aline. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD for the Laurentians, Eastern Townships, Ottawa Hull area, and also the border state. You and the other cast members certainly must have been aware to a certain degree of a little bit of the cult status of the television show. Were you not, of the previous television show and the movies, were you not concerned about typecasting?
Well, we were terrified on many levels, actually. We were, when we started, the fans, although they grew to love us, we really did not want a new Star Trek. They were quite happy with their original cast and their idols, and they looked at us as a bunch of upstarts who had no right putting spacesuits on at all. It took over 2 years, I think, to really, you know, get the ratings that we eventually got. The thing about being typecast, it's not exclusive to Star Trek. I mean, people tend to think that it is, and I don't know why, because really, any time you're in a successful TV show, for a while, it's hard to shake that role. I mean, it can be anything. You know, the people in Cheers, I think some of them had the same problem. It just is when you kind of make an impression on the fans and the public, and they like you in a certain role, they're reluctant to want to see you in a different role. You know, they like to put you in that little box. It takes time, but it can be overcome, and I think gradually all of us from our show are beginning to do a lot of different things.
Now, what about the costumes?
Oh, yeah.
Spandex. What was that like?
Well, you know, the only good thing about Star Trek coming to an end was that I was able to breathe out after 7 years. I mean, they were murder. They were spandex, you know, and they were really tight. And after lunch, it showed, you know, you could see if you had a sandwich or a salad, it was obvious in the spacesuit, you know what I mean? So it was pretty hard to maintain, because I do love my food, and I really am not, you know, I don't like to work out. I'm not, you know, I'm very European in that way. But I had to work out, and I had to try and keep in shape. But, you know, every time I gained 2 or 3 pounds, you could see it. It was hell.
Because a lot of times, well, with the exception of Patrick Stewart, I think, who didn't seem to gain an ounce over...
Now, he's one of those people who... Actually, he and Gates, too. I mean, the only time Gates ever gained weight was when she was pregnant. But Gates and Patrick can eat everything that isn't nailed down, you know, and not gain an ounce. I hate them both with a vengeance. But the rest of us, we all struggled with it.
Now, you talked earlier about the camaraderie on that cast. We've had Michael Dorn on this program as well, and he echoed that same feeling. It was quite a cohesive grouping of people on that show.
Yeah. Well, I don't know when we were cast, whether Gene Roddenberry actually thought about how well we would get along, or whether it was just one of those lucky fate things. I'd like to think that he did plan it, but, as I said, it started on day one. I remember thinking we were all going to get fired because we were laughing too much, and it just got worse.
Yeah, it's also quite documented how much a lot of the cast did not get along on the first show.
Yeah, I've always said that there probably aren't going to be any books written by our cast.
And
because publishers don't want to know how well you got along.
And we've also had some cast members from the first show on telling stories out of school about what went on that first show.
I'm sorry, I don't have any stories like that.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, you mentioned Gene Roddenberry.
Mm-hmm.
During the run of that show, Gene passed away.
Yeah.
What kind of effect did that have on the cast and crew, especially considering, as we already discussed, you were working on some scenes and some episodes with his wife?
Well, I think I possibly felt his loss a little deeper than some of the others, because the Roddenberrys sort of adopted me. I was, you know, this young English girl who had no family in America and didn't really know anybody apart from the rest of the cast. And so every holiday I would be invited to their home, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas. If I didn't go to England, I would always be invited. July 4th, I mean, you know, Super Bowl, every time they had a thing, I would get invited. And they kind of made sure that I wasn't sitting on my own, you know, during the holidays. I actually call Majel Mom. I never actually call Gene Dad, but I do call Majel Mom, and I call Eugene Roddenberry their son. I call him Bro, and he calls me Sis. And so I was very close to them. And the ironic thing, if you like, the day that Gene died, it was 10 years to the day that my father had died earlier. It was the exact same day.
Wow.
And I was in the middle of shooting a scene when Rick Berman came onto the set to tell us that Gene had passed away. And the next shot was a close-up of me. They had to wait about 3 hours before I was actually fit to be photographed again. It hit me really hard because it was such a surprise. He'd gone in to have a... He'd gone to the doctor for a checkup and died while he was there, and so it was really unexpected, and it was a really hard day.
So you were really close with him.
Very close.
So many books have been written about him. You got to meet him and know him firsthand. Was he aware of the legacy he has left behind?
I think on a certain level he was. Only because he'd lived through it for so many years. He'd seen a show that he described to the network as Wagon Train to the Stars. You know, he'd seen this show become a part of pop culture. And so he knew that when he left, he was going to leave something pretty special behind. But he didn't act, I mean, he didn't behave like he was this great genius. I mean, he was just this regular guy who snuck candy bars when his wife wasn't looking. You know, he was just a regular guy who just happened to be a genius.
We are talking with Marina Sirtis. She played Counselor Deanna Troi on the television series Star Trek The Next Generation and also the subsequent film. 7900991 is the number to call. Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. We have another half hour to go with Deanna.
As long as you spell it right, you can call me whatever you want.
Marina Sirtis. We have another half hour to go with Marina Sirtis. Line 3. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
More of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. We are talking with Marina Sirtis, who played Deanna Troi on the television series and subsequent films of Star Trek The Next Generation. 7900991, Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are the numbers to call. Do you ever get tired of hearing that music, Marina?
Well, it's actually not my music. That's the original cast music. But no, I don't answer that question. Or our music either.
Okay. That was the Next Gen music.
No, that wasn't. That was the original Star Trek music.
Was it? It is. Yeah. That was the Next Gen music.
Yep. Oh, sorry, I thought it was... Oh, no, it wasn't. It was our music.
That's right.
You know what? I'm still jet-lagged. That's my excuse.
Okay. You're still thinking of Athens. 7900991, Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Michael and Laval, hi, you're on CJD.
Hi. I was just, through the radio, and just to have a cast member from Next Generation on the radio and having a chance to express my views and thoughts, on the air with her actually listening, is unbelievable. I just wanted to say that the Next Generation had such a profound impact on my life. Just, I was doing bad in school, and then I got into Next Gen, and she played a counselor on the show, and just the whole show just inspired me to do better in my life and to better myself, and I have, and
well,
I'm just really happy.
Thank you. What do you do?
Now I'm just going to school. I'm doing a business course.
Good
now
for
I'm finishing
you.
CDIP, and I'm trying. And then I'm going into university.
Good for
I'm
you.
I'm
going to
do just a business course. I own a business. Well, I run a business to my friend. We wash windows.
That's fantastic.
It's nothing huge, but you know we're starting.
Hey, it's a start. So when you're a big business tycoon, you can. I'll hit you up for some money.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm talking to you though. It's just unbelievable.
Well,
and
I'm really glad. It's interesting because we're just a bunch of actors really who lucked out to get this job, and we just went to work every day and had fun and tried to do the best that we could do, and to hear a story, to hear someone calling up and saying that we had inspired them, it really is the icing on the cake. We never imagined that our work would have an impact like that, and it really is gratifying to hear your story.
Oh, thank you. You just actually made my friend. I'm going to talk to all my friends about this, and they're all going to be freaked out.
Well, give them my regards, and tell them if they don't believe you to call the station, and they'll confirm that you actually spoke to me.
It was unbelievable talking to you, Deanna Troi.
Thank
Marina
you.
Marina Sirtis. You
take care and good luck in all
You're
your
such
endeavors.
A great actress. I hope I see you on television again soon.
Well, I hope so, too.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. 7900991 Star Talk, 1-800-491-CJD. Now, as you mentioned, you've gone to a lot of the conventions. Do you meet people who are inspired by the show? Because in addition to the great acting that Star Trek had, there was also great writing and stories of hope. So there was a lot of to inspire people with.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started, we felt that a lot of the stories were the episodes were kind of a morality play that we did every week. Of course, you tend to, run out of morals pretty fast, but we always felt that there was a message if you wanted to look for it in some of the stories. I think that was what was so special about the show, and not just Next Gen. I think they did that a lot in the original Star Trek too. But I always said that Star Trek was probably the only show on TV that the whole family could watch together, apart from the Weather Channel. granddad down to the smallest child, and they could all get something out of it. If you wanted to watch it just for entertainment's sake, you could do that. But if you wanted to have, discussions and figure out what was being, alluded to, you could do that too. So I think it was pretty unique in that way.
So 7 years on the television series, what was it like for a cast and crew that were so close to each other over a period of years for that show to come to an end?
Well, it didn't actually hit me that it was over until the end of the first movie, because I only had 3 days off in between the end of the TV show and starting work on the film. It was ironic that the last scene that we all shot together on Next Gen in the series was the poker scene that was at the end of the episode of All Good Things, and we ended the scene, and the assistant director said, "That's a wrap." And usually, it's like "That's a wrap" is like hearing the bell going school. Everyone runs out of the studio, and into their trailers to go home. But we all just sat there. Nobody moved. And Michael Dorn, who'd been, complaining nonstop about his makeup for 7 years and was swearing that he would never put the makeup on again, started crying so hard that his nose fell off. And he was going around and, crying on people's shoulders and saying, "Oh, I love you, man. I'm going to miss you so much." And this big Klingon was just weeping. At the end of Generations, the first movie, when I wrapped my last day, which I think was the last day of the film, I couldn't leave. I was wandering around the set, not wanting to go home. I just couldn't believe that it was over. This wonderful 7 years of my life was over, and I was heartbroken. I think I grieved for about a year. I just couldn't believe that it was over.
Now, when you finally said goodbye to Deanna Troi, especially on the television series, I often hear that sometimes actors take a souvenir from the set, a place that's been their home for so many years. Do you have a souvenir from the Enterprise?
Now, who told you that? I deny it all. I'm having the police knocking on my door. Nice. I may have, some costumes in my closet. I may have, my chair. There's the odd communicator button. Tricorder. I may have some of those somewhere.
Just a few things.
Just a couple of things.
They're not going to show up on eBay or anything.
No. These are really for me. They're not going to show up anywhere.
Now, you made the films. What was the difference in doing the movies? Budgets were bigger, I would assume. Did it affect in any way, shape, or form your day-to-day work on a set?
Yeah, you sit around much longer because you have more time to shoot a film. Instead of shooting 8 pages in a day, we would shoot maybe 2 or 3 pages in a day. So basically that means the lighting people get more time to make it beautiful, and you're sitting in your trailer, with your friends, having a good time.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you've done the conventions. How far and wide have you gone for these conventions? Have you traveled the world with it?
Or? I have. I think the furthest I've gone is Australia, which is pretty far.
You can't get further than that.
No, you can't really get further than that. I've been to Australia. I've been to England, obviously, Scotland, Germany, Italy, Canada many times. I was in Montreal, actually, last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a wonderful opportunity to see the world.
How do the fans differ, if at all, from continent to continent, country to country?
They really don't. In Canada, they get my sense of humor a tad better because, you know, in some places they're more British than the British, you know, especially on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really get me. But the only time it's hard is when you're in a foreign country and English really isn't, you know, their first language and they have a, you know, and you have to have interpreters and they're wearing those little headphones that with the instant interpretation going on inside. But generally, they, you know, the fans love us wherever we are, and they're just usually really glad we just show up.
By the way, because you're from the UK, you're one of the first actresses or actors we've had on this program who, when they were on hold during our weather cast, didn't gasp because our weather's in Celsius.
Oh, well, I can figure it out. Double it and add 30.
Yeah, because a lot of people, they go, what is it there? We get that a lot.
I do the metric thing. I can do the metric thing.
We just have a few more moments to go here on CJD. We're talking with Marina Sirtis. She is the actress from Star Trek The Next Generation, better known as Deanna Troi. 7900991 Star Talk. 1-800-491-CJD. Line 3, this is Montreal's News Talk leader, CJD 800.
Now, more of Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800. To speak to Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, or 1-800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk leader, CJD 800. We are talking with Marina Sirtis, she who played Deanna Troi on the television series and subsequent movies of Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, I understand, Marina, your parents did not want you to become an actress.
That's actually understating it a little. My parents really thought that acting was just one step up from walking the streets at night, and it was not a respectable job for a good Greek girl to do. And so it was a battle to, you know, until they came around.
So I take it you're a little defiant. I understand you actually applied to a school without them knowing?
Yeah, I applied to drama school and auditioned for drama school, but I also applied to university just in case I didn't get into drama school. And I got into university, and my mom was delighted, and then a week later I got a letter saying that I'd gotten into drama school and I didn't go to university, so she was very upset.
How long of a time frame, and what was it that finally brought them around?
My mom finally came around when I got Star Trek for about a year. I started sending her money, and she came around.
Well, how much of a time frame are we talking about between you going to school and getting Star Trek?
Oh, years.
Okay.
Years, yeah. It wasn't like, you know, a month later. It was like a long time. And my mom, actually, just before I came to America, my mom was actually suggesting that acting hadn't turned out very well for me, and there was an opening in the Bank of Cyprus in the high street, and maybe I should apply for that job.
So what types of things did you do besides going to school to act when you first started working? What type of roles? What roles did you have before Deanna Troi, basically?
Oh, well, actually, they were mainly in the theater. My first job, I played Ophelia in Hamlet, and I did a lot of kind of, not modern plays, but like, as you said, I was classically trained, so I did, you know, Molière and Shakespeare and Radigan and a few modern plays, but basically I was in rep doing the classics. And I would get the occasional TV role, which kind of supplements, you know, your income. And then I suddenly realized, not suddenly, but it kind of dawned on me that because of my coloring, I was never actually on TV getting the leading roles because I didn't look English. I was always getting, you know, the exotic mistress or, you know, the foreign person, and those parts were never the lead. And I realized that I probably need to come to America where, you know, apart from the Native Americans, no one is American, you know, originally. Everyone's from somewhere else. And it might not go against me to be so ethnic-looking, it seemed to work out.
But you may not be so ethnic-looking in the United States, but there is the British accent.
There is, it's not as strong as it was when I first you know, when I first came. In fact, all my British friends think I sound American now, so it is kind of weird. But I'm going back to England. I'm going to England next week to shoot a TV pilot out there, and I'm playing a Greek from North London, which is exactly what I am. So I'm gonna be back in my old neighborhood shooting this TV show.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you look back at the first year of Next Generation, and you could see the mistakes you were making. When somebody like yourself becomes successful on a television series or in films, some of their earlier work comes back to haunt them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have stuff that shows up on television, either here or in the UK, pre-Star Trek?
Yeah. I call it my life before Star Trek. And, you know, like most actresses who are, you know, trying to pay the rent, there are a couple of things that I took maybe a little too many clothes off, you know, and there they are now for all to see. It's almost a guarantee, you know, that if you ever need to pay the rent and you take your top off, you're going to become famous. All you actresses out there, it's a guarantee. If you go take your clothes off in a movie and you're going to become famous, and it's going to come back and haunt you.
Now, in addition to working on this television pilot you said for the BBC, you also, I understand, just finished a film called Crash?
Yes, I did. That was, that's going to be quite an interesting film. It's an amazing cast. Sandy Bullock, Brendan Fraser, Don Cheadle. It's about race relations in Los Angeles, about a terrible misunderstanding, and I think that's going to come out by the end of the year, if not early next year.
When you first got into school to act, where did you think or see your career going, and how different is the reality of that dream?
It's so different. I you see, when I was at drama school, I imagined that I was going to become the great classical actress. And that I was going to be a lady of the theater, and I was going to play Hedda Gabler and Lady Macbeth and, you know, all these wonderful roles, and that hasn't happened at all. I'm a TV person with the occasional movie, so it's very different. You know, it's like John Lennon said, life's what happens when you're making other plans.
But when you talk about the plans you were hoping to fulfill in being in the theater, and you're doing television, isn't that to a same degree the career that Dame Judi Dench has?
Well, Dame Judi Dench is my idol, and I always say, you know, I want to be Dame Judi when I grow up. She has, to me, the perfect career. She does everything. You know, you can go to the National Theatre in England, in London, and see her play Cleopatra one night, turn the TV set on, and she'll be in a sitcom. Go see a movie, and there she is. Listen to commercials, and she's doing voiceovers. You know, she does everything, and I think that's the perfect career. I think it's very, very dangerous to just do one thing in the medium. You know, I think it keeps you fresh and interesting if you do everything. And I don't know how actors can live without going on stage occasionally. I know that I can.
Because, you know, sometimes, I mean, you mentioned, you know, doing the theater, and sometimes one gets an impression of British, and also to an extent some Canadian actors get the extent that the classics, the more, for lack of a better term, highbrow stuff is the only thing that they are willing to do.
It, you know, sometimes it's the only, sometimes you're pigeonholed to the extent that that's all you're able to do. You know, people see you a certain way, and you're not given the opportunity to do other things. I mean, that's really prevalent in our business, is this pigeonholing of actors. People want to be able to figure you out. It doesn't happen so much, I think, in England and possibly Canada. It happens a lot in America. They really want to be able to put you into the box. So when people say to me, oh gosh, I didn't recognize you in that movie, I'm always thrilled, but really it's not a good thing. It's actually better to be recognizable. But, you know, I'm really happy with my career. I get to do plays, I get to do films, I get to do TV. As I said, I love every part of the business, and so I really want to keep my hand in across the board.
And has Star Trek given you, quite frankly, the financial opportunity to be able to pick and choose what you want in the future?
Well, A bit. Not to the extent that, you know, I can not worry about ever working again. That's not the case. I have to work to pay my mortgage. But it gives you, you know, it gives you recognizability. It gives you a profile. And a lot of this business is about recognition. So it does help.
I want to get back to the Star Trek character for a bit. One of the things that was always interesting to watch over the years was the relationship between Deanna Troi and Will Riker.
Yeah.
Was that something that was there from the very beginning, or just developed because of the chemistry between you and Jonathan Frakes?
Well, actually, it was there as a story point in the very first episode, and then because Jonathan turned out to be this studly guy, and they wanted to make him like the stud of the galaxy, they tried to ignore it, and so for 7 years we played a lot of stuff between us, Jonathan and I, that ended up on the cutting room floor because the producers didn't want to see it. But we always felt that the relationship was valid and interesting, and continued to kind of push for it, and in the end we were right, because in the last movie we actually got married,
which was great to see. What was the reaction from fans of the two of them finally getting married?
Well, finally, you know, finally she made an honest man of him.
We should mention that you are also a married lady. You said earlier that your husband's in the background working on the plumbing.
He's actually thrown in the towel right now. We've told me to call the plumber.
He's a musician, right?
Yes, he is.
How did,
yes.
Michael Lamper?
Yes.
How did the two of you meet?
Well, he was playing guitar in a friend of mine's band. And I asked him out. That's how forward I am.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Right now, coming up, you say you have a film called Crash, which is coming out near the end of the year. You're working on a BBC pilot, which will be the end of the September, right?
Yeah.
If that goes through, will you be going back to London for a period of time to work?
I will. Fortunately, British series only go for 6 to 10 episodes, not like here where they go for 26 and show for half the year. So if I do go to London and it is picked up, I'll only be gone for a few months.
Mm. And is there a possibility that something like that would be seen here in North America, especially with your cachet, your name?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just have to rely on good old PBS, you know, because that's where these shows usually show up.
Or nowadays, people have BBC America.
And BBC America, too, yeah.
And here, BBC Canada, that's also available as well. It's been an absolute delight to have an opportunity to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Peter.
So many people are fans of yours, as you've heard earlier, and I'm sure it must give you a great feeling to know you've done something in a television series that means so much to so many people, and will, quite frankly, for generations.
Yeah. As you said, my husband's a musician, and I remember talking to him about Next Gen, because, you know, when you're in it, you don't really know. You don't really see, you know, the whole picture. And he said to me, you know, being asked to be on Star Trek is like a musician being asked to join the Rolling Stones. And I thought that analogy was really good.
Excellent analogy.
It's you instantly become a part of, you know, kind of pop culture, and whether you like it or not.
Marina Sirtis, star of one of the stars of the television series Star Trek The Next Generation, and also the subsequent films, and again her upcoming movie called Crash, and keep your fingers crossed, look for that BBC pilot to be picked up, and maybe we'll see that. What is the pilot about, by the way?
It's about Greeks in North London.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Bubbles.
Bubbles.
Yeah.
We will all look for Bubbles.
Okay, then.
Thank you very much
for
being on the program
with
us.
Bye.
Bye-bye.